Hey there, oh there, you're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast on the internet where history shows again and again how nature points out the folly of man. I'm Bennett the Sage, I'm joined by Mark the Engineer, and today we have a very special guest. You may know him as King Kai from Dragon Ball Z Abridged, you may know him as the man who actually makes Dragon Ball Z Abridged, but we know him as our little Kaiser Cat. Yes, Kaiser Neko is with us to talk Godzilla and his latest movie. But first, the pleasantries. Mark, Scott, how have you been?
Guest goes first. Called it.
I've been working on that thing on the internet with Dragon Ball.
Dragon Ball must work on Dragon Ball. Must work on Dragon Ball. True to life experience on that front, Scott?
Well, actually, it's sort of funny. We've got a con coming up in a couple of days, and we've got a movie. Like, I need to get a preview done for it. So,
oh god. I'm basically in the same boat as with you. I just finished a new con special to show at Fanime Con, which will be held Memorial Day weekend.
I hate you.
Oh, dude, I forgot you went to Fanime Con, didn't you? Once.
Yeah, I've been to Fanime Con a couple times. It was when I was a teenager. Like, it was after I just found out what conventions were, and I was like, Dad, I have to go to this con. It's up in, we live in Southern California. He's like, we're not going to like fucking San Francisco for this. No, Dad, I've got to go to this con. I need to buy more anime. You need to give me $100, send me into the dealer's room, and then come back 4 hours later after I've deliberated and nearly killed someone.
It's like, okay, Scott, okay, we'll fly out to San Jose. Just
actually, we all drove.
Oh. Jesus.
Let's see, wait a minute. You're from Southern California around Apple Valley at that time, so that would have been like, what, a 5-6 hour drive?
Yep.
On I-5, too, the loneliest stretch of road in America.
See, I got nothing because I can't go to Fanime Con because they haven't invited me yet. Nobody loves the engineer except for that weird dude on Tumblr.
For those of you who did not follow, me or Mark on Twitter, I linked a very, very special That Guy with the Glasses secret. Apparently, Mark has a secret admirer. He has the biggest man crush on Mark. In fact, his man crush is so huge that he misspells Mark's name in the post.
Everybody misspells my name. Like, first off, I'm perfectly fine with the misspelling of my name, or at least I would have been, if somebody didn't figure out that my full name's Marcellus. Like, that just...
Like, well, of course it is. Your name is black. Your name is Mark, and you're black. Of course it's Marcellus.
It could have just been Mark or Marcus. But no, they, like, somewhere they managed to dig up something from some old post somewhere, and they figured out that my name is Marcellus, and they plastered it right on IMDb. So it says, born Marcellus Swint, and I'm just like, ah, damn it. So I would have been fine with the misspelling if they would have just kept my full name out of it. But now that it is, now I'm not okay with the misspelling of my name. It's Mark with a C.
Now I'm just curious about somebody misspelling your name as Mark Ellis.
That would be the Philadelphia public school system.
No way. Somebody spelled it Marcellus with a K?
In the public school system, they only had so many characters per name, and my name is just way too long because my full name kept popping up in the system. So my first name always got shortened. So I got Marcy, Marcellus with one L. It got really bad at a few different points during my early primary school days. It was I don't like to remember.
No. I never suffered as much as you did as far as the first name spelling front is concerned, but I was not a good kid. I always was sent to the principal all throughout my elementary school days, and my principal got to know me very, very well over the years. But from second grade to sixth grade, she could never remember how to spell my name. Was it with a one N? Was it with one? Was it with two T's or three T's? I think it has five T's somehow. Yeah, five T's in Bennett.
My Android picks it up just fine. Double N, double T, never gets it wrong. It's when I see a name Bennett with one T that I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Exactly. Tony Bennett spells it 2 N's, 2 T's. Why would you think it would be spelled any other way?
I don't know. You know what it is? One day I was just driving along thinking about this whole problem that you have with the spelling of your name, and I kind of thought, why is it that it's double N, double T? You know what I think it is? I think it's because on paper it looked impressive to your mom.
The reason why I was named Bennett was named after my grandfather's friend Paul Bennett, but there was already a Paul in the family, so I couldn't be like, I already have an Uncle Paul, so they just call me Bennett. I wasn't going to be Paul White. Okay, oh God, Paul the Sage. No, that wouldn't.
Works out for the.
That page. Would not roll off.
I, of course, I've never had that problem with my name being Scott. But my last name, on the other hand, Frericks. Oh my God!
If you want to take a minute and just instruct everyone in the pronunciation of your last name in the same way that, like, I would give Abear the same opportunity. Like, take a minute, explain to everyone how your name works. Explain to people that it's very German.
Well, here's the thing: it's actually based off of Frederick, which is you know, king. Like, but it's Frericks, F-R-E-R-I-C-H-S. I can never say it to anybody. Frericks. And I swear to God, they will repeat it back to me. I can say it twice, and they will say Fredericks each time.
I thought it was Frericks at first, and then I worked for a German company for a while, and it kind of hit me like, oh, it's Frericks. Okay, I get it.
Yeah, I think I got it on the first try. I saw it, and it just clicked in my head. It's like, wait a minute, there's no D, so see, maybe you should.
It's gone around the bend. It's been Frederick. It's been Frierick. One time it was Frisch's.
Frisch's britches.
Oh my God, you sound like some duchess's cat. Frisch's. Frisch's.
See, the thing is, though, is that we can bond over having a name that no one gets right, because every time I have to, like, whenever I go to the junkyard, and sometimes junkyards need to take your ID, and it's like, what's your name? It's Mark Swint. Swing, Swint. Swell, Swint. Swinton, Swint!
I can't even imagine anybody seeing your last name and not being Swint. Done. Out. Go.
It's, like, honestly, it's just remarkable. Kind of like, they figured out that, you know, the human brain is programmed to see faces and patterns. So that's what I think it is that it's the human brain is just programmed that it does, like, Swint is not a common name, but Swinton is. So they just kind of, like, Swint, Swing, and Swift are more common names than Swint. So their brain just hears Swint and they go, so it's Swift, right? No, it's Swint. It's Swing, right? No, it's Swint.
Well, not my last name is also kind of complicated. Even though it's spelled W-H-I-T-E, all the letters are silent. So if you wanted to get my attention, you just kind of have to nod.
Would Bennett show up, please? Would Bennett please report to the principal's office?
You know, I had the bit in my head, and then I realized, wait a minute, this is a podcast, so how do you make a joke about not saying any letters?
At your
got service. A little ahead of myself there, boys.
At your service with the blowing into the mic. That works. So how am I doing?
Yes, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm on the marquee at Anime Next.
Yay! Woo!
Please do come to Anime Next. I'm there every year.
I hear it's much better than Anime Previous.
That's why we have you here, Scott, for the zingers.
Million subscribers on that channel of yours, right?
This is the writing that gets the bitches.
Yeah.
1.26 million subscribers, huh? Yeah. No wonder. Small wonder you have so many followers with jokes like that.
Oh. But yeah, I'm on the marquee at Anime Next for the first time in like years. The last time it was me and A-Bear. Now it's me, Bill Rogers, and Greg Hauser doing a 3-day VA workshop with lots of stuff to do, which is really just me running around. And the Epcars are going to be there, and Matt Mercer and Josh Greeley, who is awesome.
Oh, cool.
That Epcar guy is nice.
Oh, yeah. He's nice and as tall as a tree.
As I've heard, Richard Epcar is, what, 7.5 feet tall?
More like 8. Seriously. Every time he would walk over to me, I just got intimidated. His voice is so deep. He's so tall.
He's so big. Like, you just kind of are immediately just slammed back into the Venture Brothers with Hunter. It's like, Jesus Christ, look at the size of you. Don't they know there's a war on?
I mean, if I got to be that size, I would just call everyone puny mortals. Because that point, they are.
Well, it's the first time I'd been that, you know, this far south of Northern California that I'd seen a redwood that tall.
Oh, come on, let me reach back, man. I don't think I hit that one out of the park. Boom!
So, Anime Next is, I think it's not next week, but the week after next week. The week after next week. It's the weekend of the 6th through the 8th. In June, so that'll be lovely. Come by, say hi, have me sign a printout of a Super Tool Shed title card, which is what someone totally had me do at Zenkai Con. Which, thanks, guy. That made me feel good, actually.
Oh, yeah, that is. There is literally no other reason to go to New Jersey except for Anime Next.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, because we've had this conversation before, that Jersey is just a trick. They trick you into coming because there's no toll to get into Jersey. And then they're like, enjoy New Jersey's fantastic shopping. We have a sales tax here. Don't know why you came here instead of Delaware, but fuck it, you're here now. And then when you finally say, like, oh, there's so much selection in Jersey, I'd really like to go home to anywhere else now. Oh, you want to leave Jersey? That'll be $5.
They grift you into Jersey.
I've been to Jersey once. It was their airport.
Me too. And they still made you charge $5 to leave on an airplane.
Stewardess just walks by and it's like, $5, please. $5. $5. Kick or death.
And if you don't pay the $5, that's when a big old Irish guy in a Red Sox hat just takes a baseball bat to your knees. You either leave $5 less or you leave on a gurney.
No, what happens is the plane takes off, then they ask you for the $5. You don't pay. Explosive decompression.
It's like, I hope you can fly. Kick.
Try to land in the Hudson.
Flap your arms. It's your last hope. And that's when you land in Pennsylvania and you escape Jersey.
Yeah, I still kind of want to do... I want to film a bit called Escape from NJ.
Please tell me you're going to have an eye patch.
Well, I don't want to be Snake Plissken. I'm black.
Come on, man. You would have been an awesome Snake Plissken. You would have been an awesome Kurt Russell.
No, but strangely enough, when I was at Zenkai Con to tell a Zenkai Con story, I finally got to meet in person and work with in person Doug Walker. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. That bit is going to appear very, very soon in an upcoming episode of Anime Abandoned.
Which you are all going to love.
At least I hope you're all going to love. Not to spoil anything, but we were talking with Mark was talking with Lewis about this upcoming episode, and we're not very sure how into anime he is or not, but he said the title of it, and Lewis did one of, oh, I know what that's all about.
Although, just as an aside, motherfucker, I told him about the top 20 robots list, and I told him about the RX-78 thing, and he actually goes, well, they're not all called the RX-78. You son of a bitch!
You fell for the trap again!
So apparently Lewis knows Gundam.
Oh yeah, he knows Gundam.
And not only does he know Gundam, for April Fool's, he did a Gundam Abridged episode.
See, I didn't know. So I fell into this trap where one more person, of note as well, gets me on them. They're not all called the RX-78. So then I'm stuck explaining it to him too.
It's like, you listen here, you little shit. There's over 2 dozen derivations of the RX-78 all over so many freaking continuities. We already established that the RX-78 is the series.
It's the daddy of all you see. That's the wording I use. I even told Lewis that. It's like I said, because the RX-78 is the daddy of all you see, that's why it is that I felt like it should be called the RX-78 series to have a sense of occasion, as opposed to, you know, calling it the Gundam franchise or the Gundam series. But whatever, not the point. The point is that I got to work with Doug, And the reason why we're having this aside again is because Snake Plissken, motherfucker, kept calling me Nick Fury. Refused to stop. Would not stop. He'd be in the middle of a conversation with Uncle Yo. Oh, look, Nick Fury just showed up.
And you know what the funny? You know what the funniest part about it is?
What?
It's not just because you're black.
No, Doug's reasoning is because he would look up and I would be gone because I disappear from the green room a lot. Like, pretty much it's that, yeah, I'll go around the green, like, I'll go around the convention, like, once every couple of hours, but generally speaking, I'm just hanging around the green room or outside smoking. So whenever he would look up to say something to me, I would just be gone, ninja vanish. So after the first couple of times this happened, apparently, he just started saying that I am Nick Fury.
I always thought it was because you brood a lot when you're just...
He brought that up, too.
Well, like, he's tall, dark, brooding, black, and knows more than everyone else in the room.
You know...
Okay, all right. You turn that negative into a positive, Scott, and for that, you get an internet cookie.
Yay. But I just cleared out my cookies. Ah, guy, now I have to log into Gmail again. Ah...
All of my validations are gone.
I had linked like so many YouTube accounts. I don't even remember the password for half of these.
Oh my god, this is gonna
speaking
be
of internet
really
cookies
cute
and episode. I know that's just what happens when Scott shows into town. He needs to stop by more often. Wink.
Well, pretty much Scott's going to show up anytime we have a movie to talk about that we all know he's going to hate. So, except I didn't see Spider-Man. I dodged that bullet.
We could always talk about Man of Steel. I could go on for hours about that.
No, just make the promise that when Batman Superman happens, you'll be here.
I will. There's no way I could not be here.
So... For those of you who watch my Sage Versus series, you all know mine and my friend Gabe's opinion on it. We thought it was a lot of fun. We felt that while the characters were pretty bland and they're just not interesting to look at, and they're just not interesting to sit through their interactions. We felt that considering where the franchise has been and where the other franchises, its contemporaries, have treaded as far as the norms are concerned, that, you know, bland is so much better than annoying, and that's what we felt. And seeing what they did with Godzilla and that ending was worth it to us. Like, the goods were really, really good. The negatives were there, but that didn't bother us as when you take in the whole film for us. So with that said, Mark, Scott, why do you hate Godzilla?
Okay, before we start, we're going to play a game that my friend Rob calls Good Cop, Bad Cop, Worst Cop.
Aha!
So it looks like I'm good cop.
You're good cop. Now, Scott, would you call yourself bad cop or worst cop?
I'm definitely not worst cop here.
All right, I'll be worst cop. Okay, audience, we're going to play a game called Good Cop, Bad Cop, Worst Cop. So the good cop just spoke his piece. So bad cop, which is Scott, go ahead.
Okay. I'm a little intimidated. I've never been a bad cop before. Hello, buddy. So if I had to be completely honest about Godzilla top to bottom, the term mixed bag is so overused, but I don't know how else to describe this movie, because it has so many of the things I love about Godzilla in it. Like, that last third act, that final stretch, is everything I'd wanted for the entire movie. And in the first quarter of it, like the first third of it, that first act with Bryan Cranston, oh man, it was such a great buildup. I mean, yeah, it was taking a while, but I'm okay with the idea of building up to the monster in your monster flick. But that, the whole middle bit, the second third of that movie, is just a gigantic steaming pile of boring. Aaron Taylor Johnson?
Kick-Ass?
Yeah, he... I liked the first Kick-Ass. I tolerated the second Kick-Ass. I didn't think it was bad, but I thought it was... I thought it didn't embody a lot of the energy the first movie did. And I kind of felt like... But I always loved Aaron Taylor Johnson's performance in those movies. I felt like he understood that character. I thought he was, you know, really portraying the nerdy guy turned like wannabe badass very well. This fucking movie happens, and I hate him. I hate him. I hate Aaron Taylor Johnson. And you know what? Maybe that's not fair. Maybe there's another movie in him. Like maybe the next thing he's in, he'll get back to being likable and having a personality. But this Jughead bullshit made me want to strangle myself. I got bored during a Godzilla movie. I got bored during a you know how fucked that is? Like, you could be a lot of things in a Godzilla movie. You could be shaking your head. You could be laughing your ass off. But you do not get bored at a Godzilla movie. But
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just don't care about this Jughead wannabe main character's family. What happens to him? I mean, the only reason that his character even exists, really, is that they needed a human element that they could move from location to location. And having him be part of the military and needing to get to his family meant that no matter what, he would always be part of the action. However, that's all there is to him. It's just a way to get you involved and get you on the human level. Meanwhile, Godzilla's character gets basically, like, truncated. No, at no point do you ever really get to feel like he's a character until that, like, the first time he shows up and the last time you see him during that final battle. Otherwise, he's just kind of there.
Worst cop.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Personally, I don't have a problem with building up the monster in your monster movie. The first part of the movie was perfectly fine. My problem really is with the false advertising of Cranston. And here's your spoiler. Cranston dies.
Mm-hmm.
Your fucking spoiler alert right there. Cranston motherfucking dies, and yet he's the only thing in these trailers. All of them. I mean, do they really show, like, because looking back on the trailers, do they show Watanabe for any more than, like, a second?
No, they didn't even show Kick-Ass.
Yeah, so ATJ, nowhere to be found, fucking Watanabe, perfectly good waste of Watanabe, so congratulations, you managed to pull that off, you managed to waste a poor man's time.
God, yeah, Setozawa was the one human character I gave a shit about after Cranston died, and nope.
No, just have him, because here's the thing, it's like, you always have to have, like, your rogue scientist or your scientist who has like a weird kind of way of about going about things or theology or what the fuck ever, who, you know, is like, forget the science, forget anything, it's, you know, it's like my papa taught me about monsters, you know, like that's now let me just frame this. I didn't not like Godzilla. I actually liked it a lot when Godzilla showed up.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, I've heard all sides of the argument where one said, like, yeah, you got to think of this movie like Jaws. And the other side of the argument is, yeah, but we're stuck with these boring ass characters in the meantime. I mean, there's no such thing as a Richard Dreyfuss in this movie. And certainly nothing like Richard Shaw. No, I'm blinking on his name. Robert Shaw. There's no one in that movie either. So,
which I can
there's
get
nothing
the
to
Jaws parallel. Like, I can get the idea of that your monster is a force of nature that you don't necessarily need to see to be afraid of it. Except, I think one of the bigger problems, because originally I wanted to do Tool Shed the night that I saw the movie, which was Sunday. But now that I've had a couple of days to marinate on it, I actually have more problems with this movie a couple of days removed now that I've been able to process it than I did when I originally just kind of walked out of the theater feeling good about it. Now, granted, I did walk out of the theater feeling good about the movie. So that does speak volumes about how well this movie is crafted. But everything in this movie kind of doesn't work. The whole movie is just bits of convenience that are happening completely irrelevant to what's actually going on, which is that monsters exist and they're blowing shit up. Because the whole puny humans joke that keeps floating around, it's got more gravity to it than I think people are actually realizing can be applied. The humans in this movie don't actually do anything except for fucking Kick-Ass, who, you know, fucking torches the eggs. Which, that was, I really think that was like a last minute decision. It felt like it. Like, well, we've got to distract the monster somehow because Godzilla's getting his ass kicked.
So, 2-on-1. So.
Yeah, so we need something. So, like, Moron Jarhead sets all the eggs on fire because he realizes that they're eggs. Which, all by itself, I mean, dude's not a scientist, and... Here.
But it's pretty obvious that they're eggs. Like, it's an egg sack. He saw the egg sack.
That didn't bother me at all. The idea that he was able to deduct that was the egg sack. I mean, those were the eggs. I mean, he saw the egg sack. I mean, he knew what those were.
I don't know. I mean, if it was like if they established that he had like some grounding in a sci-fi interest, like I really liked aliens as a kid, or like I really like monster movies and
Whoa, Mark, you're giving him depth.
I know.
You're giving him a character. I know.
It just seemed way too convenient, like that he could just rationalize in his brain with all this shit going on, that one, that's a nest. Two, the nest is full of. Well, okay, they told him it's a nest. All right. They did tell him it's a nest, so maybe he could rationalize that inside of the quote-unquote nest there would be quote-unquote eggs.
And they said that, like, in the breakdown of it, that that's what they're trying to do, that the male and female are trying to make babies.
Was he in the room, though?
Yeah, he was.
Okay.
No, he's informed by this point. He knows what's going on.
Okay.
So, yeah. Like, you know, putting two and two together,
but
you
that,
know, like, oh.
But other than that moment, the humans don't actually do anything in this movie except for serve up a buffet of fucking nukes.
I disagree on that because there are scenes of human, of like the army trying to evacuate people.
People that don't matter?
Yeah, the people that don't matter. But here's the thing: like, there's this one part of the movie that I actually really appreciate. When the general talks to Ken Watanabe, and Watanabe is just trying to really, you know, like, take him by the lapels, he's like, "You don't understand. We've already tried this." And it's like, "Well, our bombs are bigger than that."
Yeah, we're talking megatons, not kilotons. It's like, you know what? I think that if a monster can eat a bomb of any size, that would tell you that maybe you don't have the firepower to eradicate it at all.
Well, to be fair, I think an actual atomic bomb in the megatons, in that range, would have destroyed the Mutos. I don't think that's the issue. I don't think that's the problem at all. The issue here, unfortunately, is the I got two things to go over with that detail, by the way. One, with the with their EMP, getting close to them was going to be impossible. But here's a real fun fact, and maybe you haven't thought about this one. You know that one scene that they have in the trailers? One of the best, like, that one scene when you saw it, you were like, oh my god, this film might be amazing.
The one with the closing doors and Godzilla's there roaring at the doors?
Which, by the way...
Didn't nice fucking fake, happen.
Yeah, yeah, nice fake out with that trailer. Nice fake out with that trailer. In the actual movie, that's the first time... No, is that the first or the second time that Godzilla fights one of the Mutos?
No, that's the second time, because that's in San Francisco.
Yeah, that pissed me off, by the way. I was so furious. I was like, oh my god, we're finally going to get an actual fight in this. Oh, no.
Closed it. I'm close the door. Oh, fuck, shit.
I was so pissed. Look, it's not, again, I don't mind building up to the end of your movie, but don't start a fight and not show it. That was some bullshit. That was basically, that felt like a budget concern. I felt like they did that because they didn't have the money to show the fight scene. That's what it felt like. I didn't feel like it was to tease you and build you up. I wasn't being edged. That was someone grabbed my cock, jerked me for like 10 seconds, and then walked away.
I'm on the same side with you as far as like that. Oh, I hate this fucking movie for blueballing me.
Hold on. I never got to my point of that whole thing. So that scene, The scene I'm talking about is the one where they all where they do the Halo drop. That really cool looking scene where in the trailer, like, holy shit, look how big he is. Like, you have these people skydiving and they're like, and they're still kind of just,
and
they're falling by him.
Yeah.
And I love that scene. How did that happen? How did that scene happen?
What?
EMP.
Oh no, remember they got to the top of the bubble.
Yeah, they use the vomit okay. comp.
No, that's cool. That's cool. So why couldn't we drop a nuke on them?
Because it's San question. Francisco?
No, because the detonator itself is electronic. That's why they were using. See, Guillermo, this is what analog looks like. It looks like a big fucking clockwork timer attached to a nuke. That's fucking analog, all right?
Yeah, well, let's not get started on the bullshit. That was the analog. No, but, No. My point being, however, still, why couldn't they drop a nuke on the Mutos if they could get above the bubble? Yeah. And don't tell me it was because they couldn't set the timer for a shorter time. If you don't have a computer that can actually tell you...
When you want to bomb something, you want it to be direct hit, explosion, and then sphere of influence, right? So, we're talking about something that eats nukes. So, the logic behind that is that you want a nuke to be pretty much on its face. And they couldn't have possibly timed that based, like, with the amount of time that they had, they couldn't have timed it based on wind speed, terminal velocity, versus the analog timer, versus what if something goes wrong, then we just handed it a nuke. Like, coming up with a way around all of those problems was a lot, was really logistically a lot more difficult than just trying to lure them to a place where the bomb's about to go off.
Especially with a wind, and it was storming too, so...
Yeah, there was a really weird supercell for no reason.
Exactly, like... I covered this in my Sage Versus, but like sunny in Oakland, stormy in San Francisco, they're just a bridge apart. No, seriously, if you like San Francisco and Oakland are a bridge apart, that's all they are. They're on the exact opposite sides of the bay. So why is one side just like
it looks
you half expect Dorothy's house to come swirling in through the maelstrom in that fucking storm. But on the other side, I've never seen Oakland as green and sunny as it did in that movie.
So to answer that question, why couldn't they just drop a nuke into the bubble? It's really just because the physics versus the analog timer. Because I'm sure that, you know, like, honestly, because you couldn't even attach an accelerometer to it. Because an accelerometer is electronic. Because really, if you can't have an electronic detonator, then the very next best thing would be an accelerometer. You set the accelerometer, like, as soon as you feel jolt A, then set circuit B. Except the accelerometer needs, like, there is no such thing as an analog accelerometer.
Not to mention, again, this was, you'd be basically nuking San Francisco versus luring them out harmlessly into the bay.
So, that I understand. But I don't know. Maybe, like, is it because I'm getting older, or is it like the movie didn't feel as epic as it should have?
No, it doesn't. And there are a lot of reasons for that. Partially being that it kept focusing on that human element, and I get it. The idea was, hey, if we focus on the humans and give their perspective, they can see how big and how jarring.
Well, yeah, you need your audience proxy.
Yeah. The issue is, we never see almost anything from the actual human perspective. It's just the humans dealing with these problems. It never really felt like people had to deal with all
of it. No, you know, because you know what it was like? It was like watching a match of Godzilla Destroy All Monsters Melee.
Kind of, yeah.
Because the humans are just like NPCs that you don't really give two shits about. Like Cloverfield, for all of the problems that Cloverfield really had... They had a really good idea of having the first person perspective of a kaiju attack. And that kind of makes you care because it's, you know, I mean, yeah, it's really fucking disjarring, make you sick, shaky cam. But that's kind of how it is that you sell the idea of a kaiju attack to a really savvy audience, you know, like for the same reasons that Kevin Smith wrote Red State the way he did. Like every time he thought that the audience would figure it out, he took a left turn. So you can't really have a savvy, like you can't show savvy audiences anymore the third person of something like a kaiju attack. You kind of have to do it in almost that first person down on the ground, you know, like that Children of Men long fucking steady cam shot. Because elsewise, it just feels like a video game, especially now.
This movie really did feel like it was going to be kind of like, it felt like it was going to be more like that, in fact. It did feel like it was going to be more like Children of Men meets Godzilla. Which, by the way, I got a semi going on right now.
Well, I never got that feeling. I feel that when you're focused on the human element, as you said, Scott, you can also get a better sense of scale for the monsters. Like one of my favorite scenes of the movie was, oddly enough, when they were trying to hide from one of the Mutos on the train tracks. Because I don't think I've ever I don't remember like so the movie ever having that amount of tension. Like you knew, like one, logically you knew that we're going to be able to ride because you don't have a movie if your main character dies. But on the other hand, the guy behind the camera, I forgot the director's name, Garrett Evans.
I don't know.
But anyway, he had a perfect sense of the monster's movements and the monster's like sense of scale in proportion to the frame.
See, I can agree with that, except that scene was kind of undone by the fact that when the EMP dissipates and the generators come back on and the lights pop up on the Muto and it's just like, it's just underlit and it's like booga, booga, booga. It's just like, oh my God, no.
I mean, I'll be the first to admit that the creature designs for this movie really lacked Toho's signature creativity.
Well, it's because...
Well, no, know, they were very American, actually.
Yeah, which, you know, yeah. What? Design-wise, that's fine. I mean, granted, first thing I will say is this, to not be worse cop, but to be, like, good cop and a half. Even though Godzilla's kind of chunky, when you see him in motion, he's awesome.
Oh my God, he is.
He is. Like anyone who has had like a problem with bulky Godzilla needs to see him in action in the movie because he had a presence.
Oh yeah.
That dude. I don't think
go ahead.
You know, like he had like terrifying presence and most importantly, they got the face right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like
the fact that they gave him eyes but they didn't give the other Mutos eyes. They just gave him like that red glow bullshit. I thought that was a good design decision. Because they're making a big deal about Godzilla's eyes. Like, we want to get inside Godzilla's head and which will lead to one of my biggest complaints about the movie. But, like, we want you to get inside of Godzilla's head and understand that he's a protector and, you know, that he has a soul. And, you know, when they show you the scene where he's, like, fucking doubled over and shit and he's looking at Kick-Ass and I was like, okay, I get it. That's actually really heartfelt.
I love that shot. I fucking hate that character. I love that shot.
He was like for two whole seconds he was Riddick, which I was kind of like, no, I'll take it.
Yeah, I saw that, and the only thing that came to my mind was he's gonna go kick their fucking ass.
And
he's gonna go shit stomp those fucking Muto bitches. It's gonna be great, and he did, and I was so happy.
I don't know what your guys' theater experience was, but it was childhood bedlam in the theater when Godzilla opens the Muto's mouth and just atomic breath.
I know, right, that was the fucking chain sword in space moment.
The funny thing, and yes, it totally was, but that moment, because it was so interesting when I was sitting back watching it. And, you know, he comes in there and he's like, oh, he's mad, grabs him by the mouth. I'm like, oh, dude, is it going to be that awesome thing where he breaks the freaking jaw?
I thought so, too.
And but no.
It's so much better.
Like, all because being Toonami born and bred, you know, when I saw that moment, I could only think of the Zatch Bell promo. Does anybody remember the end of the Zatch Bell promo where Cullen's like, open your mouth and say,
By the way, Mark, I would like to just stress that you just compared the best scene in Godzilla to a Toonami promo.
To a Toonami promo. I can do that. It's 50% my show. I could do that.
It's 100%.
Marked down to 33% with Scott here, let's be fair.
Damn it.
But honest to God, I loved every time Godzilla was it, like every frame of Godzilla in that movie is gold.
I wish Locke was here because Locke would be calling me on like last time we did a kaiju film, it was Pacific Rim, and Locke immediately nails me to the wall and he's like, you know, Mark, it sounds like you don't really like this film. It's like, shut up. It's just kaiju films have problems.
You know, if I had to be completely like to give my personal opinion on Pacific Rim really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Pacific Rim was hella fun. Dude, yeah, I fucking love that
film.
The only tweet
I had about Godzilla, because I wanted to save it all for tool shit, was this movie has a distinct lack of Jet Jaguar and or Gypsy Danger, but it passes.
Yeah, and the best part about it is that it got the sense of scale almost completely right. There were a few times where I kind of felt it was a little bit too much, like taking a couple of action figures and playing around a fake city. But I love Pacific Rim, and it's got its flaws. The acting's not very good. The characters are completely like they're cartoon characters. All of them, they're just cartoon characters. Like Idris Elba is the only character in there who really is worth his shit, and everyone else is basically just there to kind of like be like, you know, I'm the plucky hero. I'm the tough, awesome girl. Although fucking what's her face, Mako is actually really good in a lot of ways.
See, this movie could have used Mako, although.
This movie could have used Bryan Cranston till the end.
Yeah, it really could have.
I don't know, if you were going to use Bryan Cranston to the end, you would have to change his role in the movie
Make it Watanabe's role. Like, you could have wiped Watanabe right the fuck out of this movie, and
Hold on. Wait a second. Now, that ain't fair. Ken Watanabe's character, Serizawa, should have had a much bigger role. In fact, what half this movie should have been about was his relationship with Godzilla. What you do is you give Aaron Johnson's role essentially to his father, and you have Serizawa, you focus more on Serizawa trying to learn more about Godzilla. Serizawa is trying to learn more about Godzilla, while Cranston is trying to deal with the monster threat and Godzilla.
No, but instead, all his character turns out to be is the Japanese guy.
Yeah, and it sets this unfortunate precedence that we need somebody in here to know about Godzilla. Well, it has to be a Japanese dude, because if it's an American, that's just going to be fucking
Which is going to be great when they finally get up to Gamera, and it's just going to be some dumbass kid.
Gamera! And here's the thing that really bothers me, and here's the thing that is the most unsettling with its implication. This movie is about the all-American hero helping Godzilla.
Well, they don't go into any sort of real Japanese lore surrounding Godzilla. They go more into the science and like, we're the Illuminati of science and we've been tracking the shit since the 50s.
But if you're not going to give respect to where it comes from, that's bullshit. And well, that's not a shot. That is not a problem from an artistic perspective. If you go at it as just a movie, it's fine. You know, whatever. But if you go at it from the perspective of somebody who actually you know knows their films and knows Godzilla,
yeah, but you
having it like having the main character,
we know that these films aren't made for us. They're really not. Like, you know what was made for us in this film? It was one thing and one thing only. Godzilla's roar. That was it.
Well, yeah, but remember, never settle.
Well, never fucking settle. If the movie stinks, just don't go, says Jay Sherman. But the thing is that you weren't here, but we went through, we hardcore went through this, where when you give an audience everything that they want, it turns into Scott Pilgrim. How much money does Scott Pilgrim make? Next to nothing.
Man. Wow, way to go and depress me.
Like, that's just it, is that Edgar Wright had all of the fan cred, he had all of the nerd cred, he had everything you could have possibly asked for in a director/writer, and he gave you everything that you want, and more importantly, he even filmed the alternate ending that he knew fans might have wanted a little bit more, and the only version of Scott Pilgrim that we're going to get on Blu-ray, I mean, we got the special edition in quotations in the fucking steel box. But there's not going to be a Scott Pilgrim 2. There's not going to be a, you know, Scott Pilgrim Returns. you know, meanwhile, we're on the second fucking Watchmen. But when you give fans every single fucking thing they want, nobody goes. And it's not even that nobody goes. It's that the greater audience doesn't go. And it's because the greater audience isn't us. We as a demographic, nerds, geeks, gamers, otaku, we represent not enough money to put a movie into the black, not even on DVD. So,
especially if you're throwing $150 million at it, just for production, like, let alone advertising.
Like, absolutely not. Like, we do not represent enough as a people, as a demographic, collectively, not just as, you know, otakus or gamers or kaiju fans alone, but collectively, we do not represent enough money to put a movie into the black. So they can't make movies for us, because when studios take chances like that, Scott Pilgrim doesn't make enough money.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I'm just saying,
never settle. Like, never settle. You hope that directors can listen to you, and that people in production will hear complaints about, you know, like we all hope that, you know, that Zack Snyder looked at Twitter one day and saw the bazillion fucking tweets where it's like, why the fuck did Superman snap Zod's neck after no debate in his own mind, and then why the fuck was he perfectly okay in the next scene?
Yeah, see, and I've always been on, like, on the side that him breaking Zod's neck wasn't the problem. It was the way that it was dealt with afterward.
Yeah.
So, and because I don't mind Superman killing a dude on his first outing. That, in fact, that works on a thematic level, an unbelievable thematic level, especially considering they completely botched his. Okay, nope, we're getting on Man of Steel.
We're not moving into there. Save it for Batman and Superman. But these movies can't be made for us exclusively. They have to be made to appeal to a wider audience. It's why it is that X-Men keeps making money. It's why it is that Resident Evil somehow keeps making money, despite the fact that there hasn't been a single Resident Evil film that even remotely resembled Resident Evil until the fourth one. So,
the least they could have done was made the film not boring every time Godzilla was off screen. That's all.
And you know what? The weird thing is that people will buy into a fucking beat 'em up movie. They'll buy into your Kick-Ass or your Sin City or your shoot 'em ups. They'll buy into that real quick because, you know, stupid action movies are stupid. You know, like, you hand people G.I. Joe, they go to see it because it's like, it's big beefy dudes and guns and Cobra Commander and the fucking Dwayne the Rock Johnson. So they'll buy into that. But you're talking about a movie now that's really CG heavy, and more importantly, has even less of a human element than Pacific Rim did. Because at least Pacific Rim is like, well, it's humans in suits versus mindless monsters. No, it's not robot jocks. But with Godzilla, it's just like, you kind of like, they threw the people in, and I get this, they throw in the human element to be an audience proxy because Godzilla doesn't talk. Mm-hmm. And you can't relate to Godzilla. You can't, I mean, like, as a Godzilla fan, having grown up with Godzilla, you're already in Godzilla's fucking corner. You know, mm-hmm. you're just waiting for, you know, fucking destroy all monsters. Let's go.
Which is why I actually really wanted Ken Watanabe. Like, wouldn't it have been so much, meant a lot, I think it would have meant a lot more if it had been either Cranston or Watanabe during that scene where Godzilla looks at him, you know, opens his eyes, and they share that little moment.
See, I know why they did it that way, though. It's because Godzilla is the soldier of balance, and right now, fucking Kick-Ass is the soldier trying to save the Earth. And, like, it's the fact that they both have the same goal, and that's why they wrote that scene that way instead of it being fucking Watanabe. And I get that. It's just that, you know, fucking, his character was useless, just like all the human characters were somewhat useless. And you're right, it should have been that Watanabe was like trying to understand Godzilla and simultaneously convince the military that he's benign. Like, the idea that he's benign is like, should have been the selling point, as opposed to, you know, let them fight. It's like, oh Jesus, are you serious? Like, why are we here? So but this actually brings me very neatly to my biggest problem with this film.
Mm-hmm.
They say that Godzilla is the alpha predator, that he's the biggest fucking thing on Earth. that he is, and then Watanabe like reaffirms that, you know, like he's here to restore the balance of nature. All right. Why?
Also, how does he know that?
Simple question. No, because they can, you can theorize and you can figure out that since he was benign, since after you fucking nuked him, he didn't like immediately come topside and start fucking shit up. That maybe Godzilla is in fact benign. Okay, fine. His purpose is to restore the balance of nature. But in the same breath, they say he's an alpha predator. Why? What the fuck is his purpose? If the Muto's purpose is to reproduce, which is, you know, a basic animal drive, okay, I get that. Shit gets in their way, fine, I get that. They consume radiation, fine, I get that. They have an explicit and well-drawn-out purpose, which is the purpose of any living thing, propagate the species. Gotcha. What the fuck is Godzilla's purpose? Why would his purpose be specifically to destroy all monsters?
He's the alpha cock blocker.
And not eat them.
He never really eats anyone. And that was a problem that myself and Gabe kind of struggled with too. Like, it wasn't really clear whether or not, like, if Godzilla ate radiation, just like the other Mutos. It was just like,
well,
if he did,
if he has such an extended lifespan, then he must subsist on radiation. And as much as they didn't, because you know what it was, is that they didn't want to say it, but he subsists on radiation and fish. That he eats meat, but he eats, like, he consumes the same, because he's bigger than a blue whale.
Yeah.
But he consumes as much fish as, say, like, a pod of blue whales. Okay, so that's where his food source comes from. So that means that him being an alpha predator doesn't mean that he's the predator of Mutos. It just means that he just fights them for no reason and kills them. So that kind of just makes him a psycho, right?
Well, it's also...
He has no tie, no interest, no gravity over the outside world, over what's topside. He shouldn't care. He should not care. What you mean to tell me is that somewhere in Darwinian theory, there's an asterisk that says the strong survive, but just in case the strong need to get their nuts up and prove that they're king, they need to fucking destroy other monsters for no other reason than to show how big their nuts are and then go back into the sea.
Well, the idea I felt that the film was trying to convey was that Godzilla is of higher mind. He's not a beast. Like, maybe he could recognize that.
Well, they've proven before in other Toho films that Godzilla is of higher mind, that he's smarter than the things that he's fighting. They've shown that he has reasoning, that he has problem-solving skills, that you can communicate with him if you know how.
Yeah. A lot of hand gestures. And I bet some of those, a lot of those film goers had a few gestures of their own for that movie.
Don't tell me that when he gets up there, that first time he gets in there, and he's kind of got his his fist balled, and he's like, "You motherfuckers!" It's like, he looks like because when he comes up there, he looks like a guy who's just been woken, like, who has to be up at 5 a.m. for his job. It's like 2 in the morning. His friends have been playing Mario Kart way too loud. Slams the door open, comes out there and just screams at them.
Yeah, very, very Pete in Shaun of the Dead.
And it's this great scene. I love it because it really feels like he is not just an animal.
Yeah.
But he is a monster.
They characterize him well, but the problem is that he makes no actual sense. Because, okay, I can understand if he's got, like, the blinders on and he's like, ah, fucking Mutos are awake and I need to destroy them because destroy all fucking monsters. But the thing is that he's also weirdly conscious of everything around him. He's not destroying stuff that doesn't need destroying. He gets knocked into shit, but that's an accident. And, the scene where there's the fleet of ships.
Mm-hmm.
And all he is a mild tidal wave He could have gone fucking full blast. Like they've established before how fast Godzilla swims. Dude can be halfway across the planet in a ridiculous amount of time. It's kind of strange.
And you know what the funny thing is? I remember watching that scene, and it's just such a cool looking scene, isn't it? When he's, you know, he's surrounded by all those ships, and for that moment, for the first moment, I was like, oh wow, that's really cool. And then the second moment was, why don't I feel like this is really cool?
Because it's a weird scene.
It's a weird, pointless scene. Because it's like, why? How did? Like, okay,
why
so
why is he not?
So,
why is if his primary objective is to kill this thing, and kill it with extreme prejudice, then his whole, because they establish how fast he is in the movie, where they lost track of him as he was swimming. Mm-hmm. So. We know that he swims faster than any ship in a Navy fleet, but he just leisurely swims into the San Francisco Bay. Why?
Well, that's also like another point that I failed to bring up with Sage Versus is that, like, how are you, like, besides the whole, like, look of intelligence, the spark of intelligence behind Godzilla's eyes and how he interacts with Kick-Ass, it was like, how were you able to convey what Godzilla means to do, other than to have Ken Watanabe just come in out of nowhere and just say, he means to do this. How do you know? What, you're going to debate me on this?
Like,
just
how would
go
you
watch
even
the fucking...
study this?
The worst part about it is, and I've said this before, it just feels like, so we need somebody who knows about, like, he comes in, and he's basically Godzilla exposition.
Yeah, really, it's like the fucking the general calls up, like, the admiral calls up, and he's like, I need a Japanese guy right now, click.
Hey, Ken Watanabe's free. Okay, I guess Inception was too long ago.
It is genuinely like during an alien invasion that, like, a high-ranking general says, I need the best nerds you've got. You know, like, why? So, there's nothing to interpret Godzilla's actions in this movie, but you don't necessarily need to because he's entirely benign to humans for what seems like no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nature... When we say that he's a force to balance nature, what we mean to say is that he is a force to make sure that nothing bigger than him is walking the earth. All right, gotcha. So that means that he's not necessarily the biggest thing, but he is the strongest thing. He's the most resourceful thing. And as far as anything that means to harm the balance of nature on the planet Earth, he is definitely going to be, you know, the monster for the job. And he's smart enough to get the job done and tough enough to get the job done. Okay, gotcha. But humans aren't necessarily in that equation, especially not, like, if the point is, like, he means to balance nature, then wouldn't he be an extinction event? Not for nothing,
well,
but to say
kind
that
of is. Well,
but
kind
he's,
of is. He
he's
kind
an
of...
extinction he's an extinction event to kaiju. But
yeah, no, he's talking about to humans.
Like, to humans, you know, humans who took the big fat green and blue earth and made it varying shades of brown.
Well, they're actually kind of ducked under that, the more I think about it. Like, the movie never really
avoided it.
Yeah.
Godzilla does not kill a single person. He does not by choice destroy any building, does not stomp any person.
Well, that's not true. In that movie he destroys a couple of buildings.
Well, he destroys,
like,
a couple of buildings, but not like and then just fucking, like, takes down a tower or something. You know, like the worst thing he really does is cause that tidal wave at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
And that's really it. And it's almost like they characterize him in a way that after that he was almost like, oh my god, I drowned all those people. I feel so bad. I need to leisurely swim into the San Francisco Bay. I better pull it back a little bit. The world has changed. You know,
I get that, but also I feel that maybe the movie needs to focus on the fact that the kaiju, for the most part, are the bigger threat in this movie universe than humans are. Because, let's face facts, as bad as, like, as like, we, with our real world knowledge, we know the fact that we're polluting the earth and giving greenhouse gases. But in this movie universe, as bad as we are to the environment, like, a propagating species of kaiju that just shits all over everything is way worse in the immediate and in the future.
Well, they already greenlit the second film, which is going to be a fucking smack you in the face environmentalist film, because I think it's going to be that the Antarctic ice shelf, which has been massively fucked, that there's a kaiju in that.
Of that course. Works, actually. I like that.
Yeah, yeah, it's more timely, and it's more Devilman.
So, God. I mean, that works, but, I mean, they were really kind of avoiding it in this movie, and it still doesn't necessarily hold up. If Godzilla, if his point is to balance nature, then he should be a worldwide extinction event. That what they should have done, even though it's kind of murky when you do it this way. You know, the first Godzilla film, like the first few Godzilla films, everybody was kind of like, you know, like, thank God this other monster showed up, elsewise he'd be fucking us.
Yeah.
You know, like the first few Godzilla films were, thank Christ it's not us. Because if there was no monster, Godzilla would just look around and be like, everything's brown now. Kill.
Godzilla's sad.
Someone's gonna get a hurt real bad.
Like, I'm gonna put these humans in a hurt lock, you know? So.
Yeah, it's actually a really good point. But then again, I think, and it was really interesting because I had no idea until very close until the movie came out that there was going to be another monster in this film.
They held that really close to the vest because the way they originally sold it was, it's a new adaptation of the original Godzilla. That Godzilla is a walking extinction event that they're trying to stop. But realistically, it's just that you can't really stop Godzilla. Not really. I mean, he's been, like, how many times has Godzilla actually died? I think it was like twice.
Yeah, twice, but it's not by human interventions, by other monsters.
So.
Yeah, only a kaiju could do it.
So, and to say, you know, like, I kind of feel not great about the future of this franchise, because it is going to, because two movies is a franchise, because we're not going to get King Ghidorah. It's not going to happen. Do you really think that they would give up all the work that they did to ground this, to ground this movie into something that could be feasibly possible? The idea that global warming is awakening monsters that are long since dead on the earth. Do you think that they would give up that grounding, that perfect bed of monster movie creation for one iconic monster? Because you can still do Gamera, and you can ground him, and he would still make sense. I mean, he wouldn't be a fucking friend to all children. But you can still do a giant turtle.
Yeah. Well, and no, you could do a giant turtle. You could do it really well, actually.
But King Ghidorah, the Monster Zero, like, it's fucking aliens. Like, no, that's not going to happen. And Godzilla fans, like, I know a few Godzilla fans, and they would probably be the most upset about that. Like, but King Ghidorah is awesome. Like, yeah, it's not going to happen, bro. Sorry.
I would love to see how if they had the balls to pull off Mechagodzilla.
See, that's something else that's gonna go woefully missing from this franchise, is because if I mean, already there's I did like how they had, like, by the end of the movie, the talking heads talking about, like, whether or not Godzilla's good or bad, and he's the king of the monsters, savior of our city, the great Saiyan man. So I liked that.
Actually, I'll be honest, I didn't like that.
That's the nature of news now. Is that in the wake of any event, there is going to be Fox News and CNN.
With the cheesiest news graphics possible. Jesus Christ.
So.
I think the reason I didn't like it is because they had spent so much time giving us this realistic Godzilla flair. And
then all of a sudden, hey, King of the Monsters, he's our savior.
No, I'm sorry, but King of the Monsters is what killed it for me, because I was like, no, this isn't the kind of movie where King of the Monsters is applicable.
No, you got to wait for, you know, the destroy all monsters moment when everything comes for him. I would have gladly taken King of the Monsters then if, like, a bunch of shit came to wreck the earth and Godzilla was standing champion.
Yeah.
But... I don't know. I mean, this, like, Mechagodzilla is going to go woefully missing from this because we already have our talking heads in this universe talking about whether or not Godzilla is good or bad. The military has already stood back and realized how inept they are in the face of any kaiju attack. So all they can do is evacuate people. And I really don't think that they would give up the realistic grounding of this franchise to make a gigantic robotic Godzilla.
Guillermo del Toro actually went on record saying that he would love a Pacific Rim Godzilla crossover.
I'm sure he would, because del Toro's a huge fucking nerd.
Yeah, no, honestly, I not only would I buy that ticket, I would be first in line. and after this movie, after that tail whip, after that atomic breath, after all of that, oh, you better bet that I'd fall in love with that.
Yeah, did you nearly jizz your pants when his spine started glowing?
Oh, no. Oh, I did one of these. Like, wait for it.
Because because I know I was asking. I was like, where is it? Where's the big gun? Come on. You didn't take it from him, did you?
Unfortunately, it was already spoiled for me that he uses it in the film. I wish I had gone in there not knowing that he does it.
Oh, man.
You know, as shitty as the Matthew Broderick Godzilla movie was, it would have made it just a little bit better if it did have atomic breath.
Yeah, but then just it would just be fucking Reptar destroying a city, and that wouldn't have been good.
At least that would have been funny instead of just what we got, which was actually really boring now that I think about it.
Yeah, by comparison, it was boring, but you know, it does deal with a really simple idea, which is that, you know, the point of all species is to propagate, and that, like, and since there is only one of Godzilla, that means that Godzilla is hermaphroditic and able to not only lay eggs but get itself pregnant. So,
well, that's just asexuality,
like
parthenogenesis.
Yeah,
you know?
that was the word I was looking for, parthenogenesis. That,
and that's not the part that bothered me about that film. Like, when we talked about that, it was like, some people like to use that as a detraction. I'm like, no, come on. No one can. Like, that's the least offensive.
You have to propagate the species. Like, you have to make it somewhat realistic. And the threat of that Godzilla was the idea of it making more of itself. So, all right. So now we have a new Godzilla, and it's obviously long-lived. But it has to be, it can't be that long-lived. It can't be billions of years lived, unless it's magical. Which it's not gonna be. So I can almost guarantee you that if they manage to squeak out a trilogy of these films, in the third film, Godzilla's gonna die. And then there'll be like an egg or something.
There is another.
Yeah, and it's like, I need a Japanese guy to study this egg.
Oh no, then we're gonna get Godzilla Jr.
No, we're not. I don't think it would
Godzuki.
Be. We will never get Godzuki back. Godzuki is lost to us forever.
Oh, never say never there, Mark. Well, I do believe Godzuki's gonna make an appearance in Godzilla 3.
But if they smash out a trilogy of these films, then Godzilla's probably gonna die, leave behind an egg, and then they're gonna study it because they can't end on a trilogy because they want money. So they would use that as kind of their reboot point. So, you know, you have 1 through 3, and then they look at 1 through 3 and the things that people complained about, and then they do 4, 5, and 6.
I would actually be exceptionally surprised, though, if we actually got, like, I expect us maybe getting 3 films, but I would not ever expect them actually going beyond it.
Well, we expected there to only be 3 fucking Resident Evil films.
Well, yeah, but those,
but guess what?
As much as we wish there were only 3.
Well, the difference there is that the Resident Evil films are incredibly cheap at this point. Like, they're glorified, blown up sci-fi made for movie.
You know what the problem is with the Resident Evil films, just as an aside? It's the fact that for 3 films, like, okay, Nemesis was okay. Because it actually showed the fucking Nemesis doing what the Nemesis does, which is whip out a minigun and tear shit to shreds. The story behind the Nemesis was stupid. But they had 3 films in which they pretty much lost all the goodwill that they were ever going to get. And then they made 4 and 5. And they're actually okay, but no one cared anymore. And now they're going to have Resident Evil 6. And all I can wonder is, like, who's going to be left to watch it?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, Resident Evil movies, to begin with, were stupid ideas.
But they, because it was in the beginning of, you know, the obsession with fucking Z-Day. But not the point.
Well, not to mention, like, zombies. Zombie movies have become a big thing. And video game movies had become a big thing.
Mm-hmm. So, I think that we've managed to empty the pitcher on that. I want to talk about Sailor Moon.
Sailor Moon.
God damn it, man.
I'm sorry, Bennett, but Scott and I are going to leave you behind for a minute. So this might be a good time for you to go and get yourself a coffee.
Apparently, these two are chuffed to bits over the recent news of, what was it? Somebody got the rights to Sailor Moon?
Oh, again? I'm not chuffed to bits necessarily, but
I am chuffed to bits. Don't mind me.
But, you know, like Scott's gay, so of course, but me, I've got no excuse. I've got nothing. Yes, I'm a heterosexual man who really, really likes Sailor Moon.
Oh God, Tony. I feel like you should, you know, I feel like you should set up some kind of anonymous service. Like, hi, I'm Mark. I'm a heterosexual man who likes Sailor Moon. Hi, Mark.
Hey, it could just be like that Bare Naked Lady song, 1 week.
So, Bennett's gonna sit back, have a coffee, roll his eyes, and fucking make a jerk off signal with his fucking hand. And
you can literally hear me jerking off right now.
And Scott,
while we're talking about Sailor Moon, that makes a lot of sense.
Totally. While Scott reads the press release from Anime News Network.
Woo! North American anime distributor Viz Media announced after its Anime Central panel on Friday that it licensed the original Sailor Moon Magical Girl anime franchise. The streaming, digital, and home video licenses include all 200 episodes from the 5 television series, the 3 future films, and the assorted tie-in specials. This will include the first North American release of the final television series, Sailor Moon, Sailor Stars. Viz is offering the franchise without edits in its original uncropped 4:3 aspect ratio, with the original Japanese names, story elements, and relationships. It is also producing an uncut English dub with a new voice cast. Viz aims to release the franchise digitally with English subtitles starting this summer, followed by the English dub starting in late 2014. It also plans DVD and Blu-ray DVD combo releases in half-season sets starting this fall. The first 4 television anime episodes will stream with English subtitles on Viz Media's NeonAlley.com service and the Hulu Plus service on Monday. 2 more episodes will then debut every Monday, Moonday, as Viz's representatives deemed it.
Lame. That's already what Monday means. Sunday, Moonday.
No one cares.
I know. Fuck.
So, yep.
Sailor Moon's back.
Yep, and now it's Usagi instead of Serena and Mamoru instead of fucking Darien.
All right.
I don't know. I mean, like, I never watched the show, but I always felt that kind of lent a sort of cheesy charm to it, I guess.
Yes. Actually, hold on. Let's defend this before Scott opens his mouth.
Hold on. I love the original Sailor Moon. I love Serena. I love Darien. I love Amy and Lita and I love that stuff. I grew up with that Sailor Moon. That means a lot to me. In fact, I actually really liked its original score. I liked what they tried to do with the series. They tried to make it a girl show that really kind of sent a message. And honestly, I like the original Sailor Moon, the first couple of Sailor Moon dubs. So don't get me wrong.
All right. There's a collection of people that are boycotting Sailor Moon.
Well, they're dumb.
Well, they're completely dumb. However, I can understand because Kaylin, Mars Girl, wrote in a beautiful Tumblr, which I'm going to link at the bottom of the episode right there, describing and talking about these people and, you know, and what it is, like how people are comparing this to Lucas's special edition of Star Wars and how that's not necessarily right. And she's right because it really is, you know, like this whole thing in fucking reverse, because this is the way that Sailor Moon was intended to be presented. The problem is that that's what, you know, like that's not what we grew up with. So the thing is that for all of you cats who are boycotting Sailor Moon, Sailor Moon happened when there was no anime in this country. Not really. We had three things, really. And we're not going to count Speed Racer or Astro Boy or 8-Man. We had Sailor Moon, one quarter of Dragon Ball Z, and Technoman. And that was it.
Technoman. Yeah.
Fucking Technoman.
Do you know I never actually saw Technoman? Ever.
It was really good. And it's, you can still find it. And I actually need to get it for my collection too. That and Tekkamon Blade, which was the sequel.
I have seen Tekkamon Blade.
So this was presented during a time when there was no anime, there was no real precedent, and everything got edited down. And it wasn't this malicious fucking set of scissors that were going across anime that, you know, made it over 9,000 and to the next dimension. You know, like it.
No. This was something a lot more interesting. This was people in the industry seeing a show that they thought, wow, this could do really well over here. This could bring a whole new audience. And what they realized was, okay, we don't know how it's going to do so well if it's this flavor. We have to change it a little bit.
Yeah, and by comparison, this was an easy choice to make, because if Masek could take Macross, Southern Cross, and Maspita, and somehow have them all make sense as one show, then taking one show and just changing a little bit of everything seems a whole lot easier by comparison.
Yeah.
And the thing is that Sailor Moon, as originally presented, you understood it as a kid, because it's not, yes, like Chaozubao and Onigiri are fucking donuts, but you don't know what Chaozubao and Onigiri are when you're 8. So, fine, change that. They're donuts. And Serena, like, in Usagi becomes Serena because there was practically no internet. You don't know what fucking Usagi means.
Yeah. Not to mention Serena is actually not a terrible name for her. Like, if you know what Serena means, blah, 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 it wasn't a bad change. And ultimately, it really did. And as much as I hate to say this, as somebody who's always taken a huge umbrage.
As a guy who abridges series for a living.
Well, no, as a guy who's always taken umbrage with dubbing, like Americanizing anime and changing shit, as a guy who grew up with Dragon Ball, I understand what those changes meant for Sailor Moon, why they existed, and what it actually, like, the good that it accomplished, making it a big hit out here. That being said, we are past it.
Yeah, job done. 90s are over.
Yeah, we're past the general, like, we don't need that anymore and especially since this release is for the fans. This is for Sailor Moon fans. There was a way to get the old Sailor Moon series on DVD and VHS for years.
Like, if this was by order only, like, Bubblegum Crisis is coming back on Blu-ray. And oh, yeah. It is by order only, and the box set's going to be like $60, and it's not going to be a massive retail release. It is going to be by special order only by the remnants of the company that owns the license, which is really just one fucking guy. and that is by order only, and it's Bubblegum Crisis fans who are getting that. And if this was by order only, you wouldn't be complaining nearly as much. But more importantly, and I think this is really important to say, no one's forcing you to buy it.
Nope.
No one's forcing you to buy it. No one's forcing you to watch it. I intently watched Sailor Moon as a kid. I was there in front of my TV set every fucking morning. My granddad, who had no concept of anime because he spent his 20s shooting at people who looked even remotely Asian, Korean War. So he didn't get it at all. But he sat and he watched with me because he was just a cool granddad. And I had to, like, sit there and explain it to him. And the thing is that show gave you an understanding of anime when you were 8.
Yep. It taught you a lot about what... It was interesting because when you're a kid, it was hard for me to say I'd watched a whole lot of anime. Like, it's hard to... When somebody asks you, what was your first anime as a kid? You're like, maybe I could say Voltron, but I don't know because it's kind of an anime. And you think maybe Robotech, but even then you're still kind of on the wall. But you could say Sailor Moon.
Yeah, you could easily say Sailor Moon. You could say
Sailor Moon was my first anime.
But for me, it was Speed Racer, Sailor Moon, Dragon Ball, and Technoman.
Mine was The Running Man, but that's neither here nor there.
So, in like, we need to, you know, kind of sit down with each other and just kind of say, it's like, you're not eight anymore. And if you're a Nintendo fan, I really need you to fucking understand this. You're not eight anymore. Shit can be better. Now, the problem that I do have with this is a new English dub. I'm not, and that's not to say that I don't think that there should not be a new English dub, because if you're going to present it, you may as well present it in a way that everybody can enjoy it, elitist otaku assholes.
Well, to be fair, as it is right now, we only have one clip, and yeah, it sounded like ass.
It is terrible. The paint peeled off my walls.
Yeah, it sounds like ass. It does. However, I'm willing to wait on this one and see if, in fact, it's better than it sounds. Which is why it's like when I keep seeing or hearing Bradley Cooper's Rocket Raccoon. I'm just hoping in the actual movie it's a lot better.
I've intentionally avoided that for that exact same reason you've just expanded upon.
Yeah.
They want Cooper because Cooper's badass right now, but that's not the point. Mm-hmm. The point is, like, my problem right now is that there is one piece of the English dub that has come out, and it scares me. And it scares me because here's a conversation that I keep having specifically with Bill Rogers. He doesn't like the Bubblegum Crisis dub necessarily because it doesn't sound anything like the original Japanese, which is how he originally consumed that. I miss the sound of women in anime.
Oh, right.
I love the Bubblegum Crisis dub because all of the women sound like women, you know, and there's a story that goes around occasionally about how there was some anime that was getting directed and one of the Japanese directors were there, and there was an actress in the booth, and she was being told she was being told to do retakes, and the retake was like, well, make it sound sexy. And so she smoked it up, and because that's what we perceive as sexy sounding in this country is, you know, like a deep, smoky sounding voice, like, say, for instance, Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, how she naturally sounds. Beautiful voice on that woman, her or Powell or Bailey or Klinkenbeard. But that wasn't what this director wanted, this Japanese director. He wanted this woman to sound, like he specifically said, like a little girl. All right. Now, here's where the cultural difference happens. Obviously, that's not what we find sexy. We do not find the sound of screeching little girls sexy. And you know what? Different strokes for different folks. We're not here to make a judgment on the giant, weird, sexually repressed sphere that is Japanese culture. But when we're talking about the consumption of anime, I miss the sound of women in voiceover. Like in Bubblegum Crisis, like in Iria, like in everything that we review in Anime Abandoned that happened between, like, that happened before, like, what would you say, Bennett? Like, before
2003.
Before 2003, when the transition went from, well, just come into the booth, be a good actress, and that's good enough, to come into the booth, be a good actress, and screech like a banshee. hi, Jess.
No judgment call there. All right, all right. I want if Jess just happens to be listening to this, that's all him. That was all him.
But I miss the sound of women in anime. I mean, I know that it's not going to be tonally correct every single time, and I'm not saying force the sound of women in anime every single freaking time. But I am saying that, you know, when it comes to the new Sailor Moon dub, how old is Usagi supposed to be? It's like, what, 15?
Yeah.
And, okay, despite the fact that she's blonde-haired, blue-eyed, that we're using these colors to differentiate between the characters because they all have shovel-shaped faces and big eyes, you know, you could just make her sound, I don't know, like a 15-year-old girl, and you have a wellspring of talent. Like, you have the biggest base of talent out there in California. And I know that it's kind of a, you know, like, the creator is really, really hands-on right now, and it's to show respect and thank you for helping us work out getting the license for the series, blah 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 blah. But if your main character is screechy, you know, I can only defer back to Doug's Sonic the Hedgehog review, where he says, like, you know how you make voices of people who annoy you? And it's like, well, I think that you shouldn't do that, sir. I know! It's like, the reason why you make those annoying sounds is because they annoy you. And it's, and that's the thing, is that that is an annoying sounding voice. I don't think I could hack that for 200 episodes. Like that. Yeah. The fucking scratch laugh in dialogue for 200 episodes. Can we really handle that? And Kaylin's answer is, well, I'll just watch it subtitled. And here's my thing. I like to watch live action films subtitled because Sukiyaki Western Django is still one of the single worst fucking films I've ever seen in my life. But I don't like watching subtitled anime. And the reason why is because somewhere in my brain, there's a logic center, and that logic center says, well, it's a cartoon. There are lip flaps. But those lip flaps aren't dictated by actual human mouth shapes. They're just open, closed. So why can't we just have a dub? So I prefer to watch dub for that reason, because I don't, like, the best words that there have ever been, if I wanted to read anime, I'd just buy manga. I don't want to read my anime. I want to listen to my anime and experience my anime. You cannot necessarily experience anime if you're sitting there trying to read it. And I don't care how fucking fast you are at reading subtitles. I've heard this argument so many times. Like, well, I've trained myself to read subtitles. You know what? Your peripheral vision is not that good. No one's is. If your peripheral vision is that good, you must see in goddamn IMAX.
And not to mention the fact that, like, if your eyes are trained at the lower third of the screen, who knows how many subtle things you're missing?
I'm not gonna lie. You're totally right on that one.
It's like, I bet half the reason why everyone thinks that Revolutionary Girl Lieutenant has so many deeper meanings is because they're watching the subtitle version and they're not catching all the imagery. They're not catching all the subtle character emotives, or they're not noticing maybe recurring shapes.
Which is too bad, because that dub is awful.
The dub is awful, but you're sacrificing visual language, like you're sacrificing the picture for the sound.
Mm-hmm. So I don't want to watch Sailor Moon dubbed. I want to experience it, I don't want to watch it subbed. I want to experience it as a dub. And I really don't want to have to slog through, and that is the word we're using for this, slog through 200 episodes of the scratch laugh. But what are you supposed to do? You know, like, I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining because for the first time in a long time, we legit have Sailor Moon back.
Yep. And no matter what, at least we'll have the Japanese version. Even if the dub isn't great. Again, even if you don't want to watch the subtitles, there is a full-on, real great release of that series out here, which we've needed that.
And because, you know what? I don't really think anybody has room to complain, because how many body parts have you swore that you would give up if you could just get Sailor Moon on a Region 1 DVD uncut, properly presented? Not to mention,
also Blu-ray. Good-looking Blu-ray, too. I mean, sure, it's a little bit of upscaling, but
like, it's
going to
be a little bit of upscaling, but I love how they're like, in the original 4x3 format. Okay. That's something you want to advertise.
Well, no. Yeah, like, actually, right now it is. And I'm not, I hate to say it, but there's a part of me, a legit part of me, that kind of is wondering if this is a bit of a shot at a certain company who just released a other certain property from the 90s on Blu-ray in an aspect ratio that is not native.
Now you have to tell everybody the truth. How do you feel about the orange boxes, Scott?
Oh, well, I've already told everyone that I think the orange boxes are shit. What are you talking about?
Okay, just checking. It's for our audience.
No.
You can go ahead and go on the full fucking half hour tirade about how much you fucking hated the orange boxes, and yet you cannot escape them.
Well, no. See, the orange bricks were piles of shit. They were total piles of shit. And I think even Funimation knows that they were piles of shit. The Blu-rays, on the other hand, look, support Dragon Ball Z. Support it however you can. I don't like those Blu-rays. I think they're shit. I think somebody in marketing basically thought that this is the only way we're going to be able to get this on Blu-ray and people are going to buy it. And I hate the audience. I blame the audience. I blame the fucking people. I blamed Funimation at one point. I don't anymore. I blame the people. Fuck you. Fuck all of you who complain about those ugly black bars on the side of your screen. You can eat my dick. You can choke on it so hard that you're just your gasping for air brings me to orgasm. I hate you.
I will harpoon you! You are the same people who bought those dumbass red boxes!
I will cold cock you, pull your pants down, and fish hook your ass!
So,
if you pay me enough.
I mean, I'm not gonna complain about the fact that we finally got Sailor Moon back. It's really awesome. I'm happy there's a dub. I'm happy that I don't have to suffer it in fucking subtitles. I just kind of wish that, like, I wish that I could get everything I wanted. And what I wanted isn't necessarily the Deke presentation, because, you know, that was a part of my life. You know, I spake as a child, I thought as a child, and then when I became a man, I gave up childish things.
Oh my god, a Ghost in the Shell reference.
So, or hackers, depending. But still, you know, like, for the people who are boycotting, let it go. For the people who are anti a new dub entirely and just want it on Blu-ray minus a dub, let it go. Because you still have it on subtitles. It's not like you gotta make a choice.
Yeah, this is not, you are not losing out here.
And I think this all kind of ties back to, really, Godzilla. It's wanting everything, but realizing you have to settle for what you're gonna get. Because what you got was way more than you probably deserved.
And I want to end on that. I do. That we're very vocal as a demographic, but we're getting too big for our britches. Theoretically.
That's true.
Like, we think that we're bigger than we are because we have the infinitum that is the internet now. That before it was, well, where do I find other nerds? Well, there's a magic game down at your local comic book shop. But now we have Twitter and Facebook and Xbox Live and Steam and PSN and all of these congregation spaces, fucking Second Life, and like everywhere. We have all of these spaces that make it look like we are the world, and it's more like we're Pluto. That we don't even, like, in the grand scheme of everything, we don't even classify as a planet in the big universe that is entertainment. So we have to kind of think about others. That I can actually relate this. People keep asking me whether or not I'm watching Toonami anymore, and the answer is no, because I didn't campaign to get Toonami back for me. My experience was the first time I saw the contemporary Toonami, which was the introduction of the Tom One, was on the midnight run at 2 a.m, and the first thing they showed was the Powerpuff Girls, Thundercats, and a couple of other things, and that experience blew my fucking mind the night that happened. And I campaigned for Toonami to come back because somewhere, some kid is staying up past his bedtime and anime's gonna blow his shit.
Yep.
But I don't need to watch Toonami anymore. Especially, there are people who will consume Toonami no matter fucking what, and they will keep it on the air. They helped me help them put it on the air. According to fucking Bloom. So the thing is, I'm not watching Toonami anymore because I'm not a part of that demo anymore. It's not for me anymore, not necessarily. I wanted to blow some kid's mind and change his fucking life forever.
I don't even have cable. I can't watch it. But it meant a lot to me too, because that's what I grew up with, and I too want to give kids an opportunity to watch some of the best action cartoons. They'd be introduced to an entire other, like, section of animation.
And somewhere, some kid, some little girl, or little boy, in our case, is gonna see Sailor Moon on a shelf and say, that looks interesting.
It's like, wow, girls can kick ass. Hmm.
And then they are gonna be fucking Sailor Senshi strong for the rest of their lives. So let it, like, just, you know, lay down your arms, be happy with the fact that you got it, and let it exist in peace, not for yourself, but for the little kids that are out there that aren't anime fans yet, Because the first thing that some little kid's gonna see when they Google Sailor Moon is your venomous vitriolic bullshit. And that's not gonna make them feel good about being an anime fan. That's not gonna make them feel good about what they like. That's just gonna make them wonder, should I like what I like? In a time when, you know, little kids are still finding themselves. And they are extremely swayed by, I mean, like you catch something in the news every day about kids being bullied all over the internet. And no, you're not directly bullying anybody by slinging this shit all over Twitter and Tumblr. But, you know, there's something to be said about collateral damage.
What a kind of creepy note to go out on, though. But, nevertheless, I think it's time for you, Mark, to get off your soapbox and do what you do best. Bring us on home!
All right. Intro music by Nick Vaughn, outro music by Zero Reynolds. You can follow them on Twitter at Nick Versus and at Zergester, respectively. Take Super Toolshed wherever you go in MP3 format. Just go to bendthesage.com/supertoolshed. For Ben the Sage and Scott Kaiser Necoferix, I'm Mark the Engineer. Until next we beat, the shed is shut.